सत्संग, सो प्लीज रिकॉर्डिंग, देयर यू गो. ललित नमस्ते टू यू टू. डोंट नो इफ आई जस्ट सेड इट और नॉट, बट नमस्ते. इफ आई मिस समबडी आई एम सॉरी, इट्स जस्ट दैट आई एम जस्ट ड्रंक, सो प्लीज एक्सक्यूज मी फॉर दैट. ओके, सो वी स्टार्ट विद द प्रेयर फॉर अवर गुरुजी, अवर गुरुदेव, अवर गुरुज, अवर मास्टर्स who happen to be around us, always blessing us, and not a specific master, just the master of all the traditions. We bow to all the masters, all the gurus, right from Krishna to Christ, you just name it. I think there are just so many beautiful Buddha, and my Gurudev, of course, Dubeji, whose presence I always feel. Our Ishta Devata, our Ishta Deva, Shiva, our Ishta Devi, Durga, and all the deities in the world that are there, togetherness. And if we are here today, it's all because of the blessings of our gurus and masters. Okay, before also one more announcement, I will, as we know, I'll be going to LA hopefully by next week. And Samji is here. If there's Samji, you want to say something before anything, as a message to anybody who's coming or not coming, whatever, but they are there together anyway. Of course, we're all together, but if there's anything that you like to say, because I you know, I'll be coming anyway, so please go ahead and give your message.
Yes, I would.
Yes,
Samji here. I have had the pleasure of meeting some really beautiful people that have been contacting me that are coming to the retreat and helping them become situated here. So if you plan on coming, please contact me and I will help situate you and take care of anything that needs to be travel-wise as far as help of where to come and accommodations and any questions that you may have. I'm here to help.
Thank you, Samji. Samji, thank you very much for everything and, you know, helping everybody and to facilitate all the things. More importantly, through your love, we all, you know, many people write to me about how beautifully you have been tirelessly working and more importantly, with your heart in it. We can see it and we can feel it. We cannot stop thanking you for this. Thank you very much, Samji. And, rest of it, I mean, I come on the, and then when I have, there is a satsang, possibly when I reach there, I will know about the next satsang, which is going to be due probably on the, let me see, when is the next? Okay, so the next is on the 9th, and so I come there on the 6th, so depending upon how I feel, I should be fine. So I should be able to take it. But in case, for some reason, I'm not. So please excuse me if I'm here. But I will let Devika know if I'm coming and what the time is going to be. There will be a little difference in the time that's going to be there. It's not going to be the same time as in LA, as in LA right now. So it will be a little later than that. So people in India and Europe may have a difference in the time. But whatever happens, I let Devika know so she can, you know, let you all know what exactly it is and how it is. Thank you so much, Samji, and everybody else. Again, Rahul is here. Namaste. Shruti is here. Namaste. Rupa is here. Namaste. Okay, now I'm tired of greeting all of you. Okay. So, Somnath also is here. Okay, good. Somnath. Namaste. So let's begin first with the prayer to the Guruji. Yes. Om Akhand Mandala Karam Vyapatam Yen Chara Charam Tat Padam Darshitam Yen Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha. Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha. Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha. Om Shanti Shanti. Shanti, Shanti. So, before I give the talk about the next nadi, the Samarpan nadi, which is a very important nadi, I will lead you all to a little mantra meditation, very short. This is a very powerful meditation. It's with two mantras. Because I just spoke about Ishtadeva and Ishtadevi, I just happened to feel that we just start with this meditation, with this little mantra meditation. So we'll start with chanting 11 of each. The first mantra is Om Aim. Another is Om Namah Shivaya. So we will first chant Om Aim 11 times slowly. And when we chant that mantra, we feel that the energy is moving from the neck downwards into the heart, touching the core of your heart, feeling and moving to the navel, right? And the mantra finishes there. Then again we go to Om Aim and feel the vibration moving into the heart. Let your heart vibrate. Your being vibrate with it. Churn your being with the Om Aim mantra and let it be swallowed. Let it be swallowed in your belly, in your navel area. Understand, in the navel area, lot of our subconscious fears are stored. Lot of it. Much of our trauma. You know, we feel this in the pit of our stomach sometimes, this nervousness and anxiety. Right? We just feel that the protecting mantra of Aim protects it and just helps us to resolve that issue, whatever it is there, on a subconscious level in the navel. So that's the first thing we do. And after 11 mantras of Om Aim, we go to Om Namah Shivaya. Now when you say Om Namah Shivaya, we make the energy now move upwards from the throat. Om Namah Shivaya. And we make it up into the third eye. Third eye is the area between your eyebrows. This is the place of jnana, wisdom, discernment, and discrimination. Also, vairagya. Vairagya means detachment. Unless until you don't have detachment and vairagya in your life, you will not know real discernment, because you will always be swept into the lure of the world. That's why you have to do you have to bring your attention to your third eye and allow the mantra to move there upwards. But why we need the mantra? Why can't we just stay positioned in third eye? The reason is Shiva, our Bholenath, the Lord of Vairagya, will help us through his mantra. This world is full of problems and issues, and we easily get enticed in this through some way or the other. We must be able to control our senses and remain stabilized in firm discrimination state always. And for that, our Shiva is always going to come to help us through our his mantra. That's the way we approach it. So two mantras, very slowly we will do it. With love we will do it. Let's start with the first one. You can repeat with me. Yes. When you keep your eyes closed, relax yourself first. Leave all your problems outside now. You're not, forget about your problems. Forget about your head. Come to your throat area. Feel your throat area first. Just breathe a few times. Breathe fully and just relax. Breathe again. Relax. Okay. So, let's start with the first mantra. Om Aim Move it downwards to the belly. From the heart, move it downwards. It originates from the throat and move downwards. Om Aim. We will now do the Shiva mantra. Before that, just for a minute, feel the vibration. Feel it, what you just did. Dive, just swim, just take a dip into your holy being, to the vibration of the holy being. Feel it. Mantra I am just churned a few things inside of you. Churned your heart. Churned your belly. Right? Just feel it. We now start with the second mantra of our beloved Shiva. This time we move from We moved opposite manner, opposite way. We go from the area of throat upwards to third eye. And feel the vibration. Again, we feel the vibration originating from the throat and following up into the third eye and ending there. If it moves even beyond it, down to the crown and up, let it move. Yes, let it go. That is, but don't reach out for anything. Don't reach out. Just be. Just allow the vibration to move on its own. You don't try to force anything. Right? We only follow Shiva. Only follow him. Through his vibration of the mantra. Let's start 11 mantras of Om Namah Shivaya. 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 We'll do some more. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Now we go more deeper, you know. We'll do the Om from our belly, from deep inside our being, even deeper than the belly. Move the Om from there and feel as if you're moving from there up into Shivaya, a third eye. Let the inner energies of you know move into the third eye. Om Namah Shivaya. 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 Collect your being with Om. Finish. You know, collect everything together. Your being, your gut, your belly, your heart, your throat, all together into Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Last two. Om Namah Shivaya. Last. Om Namah Shiva. Now just remain in the area of your third eye and feel your beingness in relation to your third eye. Feel the relationship between your being, your extremely relaxed being state with that of your third eye. Be here for some time. Slowly open your eyes. Just feel the energy, move your hands together and place them very gently on your face. Feel the energy. Rub them and just place it very nicely, softly. Jai Ma. Jai Shiva. Now, today, satsang is, as we know, in the previous two satsangs, we were talking about the two nadis, that is of first is Sushumna, that goes from the basal spine, goes to the crown and to the medulla first, behind, and then to the crown. And what we had spoken about in the first one was about purification of the subtle body through the practice of power-packed nabhikriya, and then moving the energy and the breath into that Sushumna Nadi. By moving the breath to Sushumna Nadi, we achieve the purification of our subtle body, our astral body, and be able to raise our consciousness and to higher levels of existence. Right? What do you mean by level, higher level of consciousness? It means that we no more identify, we still have the body, the physical body, but we identify or we know, we realize ourselves to not just being this physical body of the five elements, but something beyond it, which is called the energetic body or the prana body or the life force. Yes? So that's a important thing about Sushumna Nadi. We understand about the purity of the through the purification process, consciousness allows us to explore the different levels of our existence and not our dimensions and not just in the gross body. So that's the first particular thing about, briefly I'm just talking about it so that you understand the process and what context I'm going to talk today's topic about. And as we go more deeper than that, the next one was the Amrita Nadi, which is extension of the Sushumna Nadi, which moves from the crown back into the right side of the heart. And the spiritual heart, as Ramana Maharishi, Sri Ramana Maharishi, very beautifully explained, it's called the Amrita Nadi. In the Amrita Nadi, it is purification of the causal body. Causal body means what is the reason for us to suffer. The cause of us to suffer is called the causal. And suffering, biggest suffering is we come back again into this mortal body, again and again, according to the Hindu belief. And also, even if we don't come back into the body, it doesn't really matter. What matters is our tendencies, our habitual patterns, if they are predisposed in a certain manner, and if it is against, and not in harmony with spiritual life and spiritual principles, then we are born to suffer on cause of that. And that's why it's important to observe the spiritual principles and practices. And which means through the process of being in the witnesser, we do not engage and don't identify with these tendencies that are there. In fact, we just move beyond the and more inwards. We are going more inner than the prana body, not just this life force. We're not just the life force. We are witnesser to that life force. That's how we touch the Amrita Nadi, by being a witnesser, by being an observer of everything that's happening in our life. Sorrow, thoughts, stories, my story, his story. There's always an observer for that. And that observer, according to Sri Ramana, and of course, according to the real sages and saints, is the real you. It's called as self-realization. Realization of the self as who you are is that witnesser that lies at the background of everything that's happening on the foreground. So this is the basic thing about Amrita Nadi. The moment we come to know about this, we slip back into the witnesser state and rest there in that state. Rest there in the state meaning what? How do we rest there? We rest there as Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means it's the only truth. Yes. Then Chit means pure consciousness and awareness. And Ananda means joy. So in short, we can just say we rest in ourselves as Anandam, as Paramananda. Paramananda means Paramananda. Paramananda means that ananda, that happiness that we cannot find in the world, but is there within ourselves, always available for us, because that's what we are, right? So, and again, I spoke about another important thing there in the Amrita Nadi is this, that we will not be able to establish fully in the witnesser state unless and until we don't deal with our vasanas. Vasanas are what? Our tendencies. You must look at some of the videos that are there on this. Our habitual patterns that cause us to do certain acts and replicate our acts, and with that acts, we replicate the same feeling again and again, comes back to us, haunting us in ourself. So we must get rid of those vasanas, like attachments and jealousies, or certain negative self-pity, victimization, etc. These are all forms of bandhavasanas that we identify with, and the process is given in RRPGM, which I spoke about in my earlier satsangs too, and there are videos for that. So you must go through all these things before we come to this important satsang, because here I'm going to contradict those two methods. In a way, it may seem like I'm contradicting it, but actually it's not a contradiction, and you will know why. The thing is that this particular axis of Samarpan Nadi is, it's not about practice, it's not about doing, it's not about purifying, it's not about being. In the first stage, it was about doing. You are doing yogic exercise, you are doing the Navi Kriya, you are doing this so that you can purify. In the Amrita Nadi, you are being, being. But this Samarpan Nadi is not about doing or being. It is about embodying. Embodying what? Embodying truth as it is. Embodying truth as it is. Right? It's not about purifying anything. It is what you are. In a sense, what you really are. And appreciating, acknowledging it. So what is exactly truth? What is the one truth that we all know? Of course, we know all about our being and body and everything and all the energy. At least we know, you know, but sometimes we're out of it, sometimes we're in it, whatever. One truth that we all know is that there exists some higher power beyond us. That is the biggest truth. That there is this bigger power that is there that tells us, or that is basically guiding us, or I cannot call we are the mercy of it, but it seems to control things. Something that we cannot do according to our will. Nothing happens, everything doesn't happen according to our will. There is some power beyond us that exists. So here in the Samarpan Nadi, this is the switch that I'm talking about. Because all the conventional methods and all those in the first two stages about doing and purifying and being is centered around moving inwards. All the time, if you say, Sushumna Nadi is where? Inwards. Amrita Nadi is where? Inwards. Means, actually, it's not inwards or outwards, but the approach, the pointer, the way to move and access these two nadis is always through an inward process. I move myself and my attention inwards. Whereas, in Samarpan Nadi, it shifts completely. It shifts from moving inwards to actually into the other. To the other. I call it the higher other. The worshipping of the other. So, it's not about moving inversely into your being and staying there and just being there, which is self-realization. You self-realize yourself through this process, but it does not necessarily mean it is liberation and freedom. That's the difference. You see, when I talk about embodying the truth, when we talk about the first two stages, it's about purification. Purification of the subtle body, purification of the causal body. It's like a mirror, if I have to give you an analogy. You see a reflection on the mirror, and you feel there's dust in the mirror, so you take your fingers and you rub that mirror, and the clear reflection emerges. This is by the first two stages. But when you come to embodying yourself, embodying what it is, or what the truth is, embodying the higher truth, the highest truth, you come to know that it's not about the mirror in which you see the reflection. It's the ocean in which you see your reflection. You see? And you cannot take finger to clean the surface of the ocean to see a better reflection of yourself, can you? It just won't work. Right? You can do it in the first two stages. The mirror can be clean. But how can you clean the belt of the old surface of the ocean to see a better reflection of yourself? Even the thought of it is hilarious. So, what exactly is this is, in simple words, is like this, that we worship, an outward worship towards a deity. It's not an inward worship, it's an outward act of worship. We're worshiping it in an actual way, which may seem ritualistic in some way, but because it involves a bodily movement of moving the body into it. Into that act, into the participation of the deity. Now, so the higher other I mean by higher other is a deva or a deity. Like for example, Shiva or the Devi. When you worship them, you worship like this. You worship with our hands together and we bow to them. What does this mean? We are actually physically bowing to a deity. Acknowledging it, appreciating it like this, right? So there is an act to it. There is a physicality, a bodily physicality involved in it. Now, why is the bodily physicality involved in this? There's a reason why it is so. I can just do it inwards. And that is also fine, you know. Why do I have to show off or show a bodily thing? The reason is, so far we believe that, and all the conventional practices believe that the ego can be eliminated from within itself. But the fact of the matter is that some trace of ego remains in your body, in your physical body. It remains there. And that's why you need to surrender the physical body. Physically, there has to be honoring of it. Physically, there should be an active participation of acknowledgement and knowingness, of acknowledging and appreciating that there exists a higher power other than you. There must be demonstrated through physicality. Because when you do this way, you actually do not allow the ego to function. Because the ego is very clever, it's very tricky. What it tells you is, I exist inside of you, try to take me out from there. Right? There's no need for you to bow to somebody. It's not required. You don't need to do it. You just have to go inward. From there you'll have self-realization. Yes, you can have self-realization, but you cannot have complete freedom because that trace of ego still remains attached to the physicality of your being. How? If you see, even many yogis and jnanis, they can go inside themselves and sit inside, and you yourself will experience it, that you are having this bliss and joy, and someone says something to you or threatens your existence or threatens your peace, immediately something comes to defend it. Something comes to defend it. It has not got eliminated from here. And that is the reason why it is important to have a bodily participation through actively bowing to the higher other, which means to the deity, either Shiva or Ishtadeva, anyone that you at the feet of the deity, at the feet. You could imagine it. You don't have to have an idol. You don't have to have an idol. You can just imagine there is something that exists other than you, a higher other than you. Could be just a form of light. It could be Christ. It could be anyone that you feel at a higher vibrational field, at a higher, and you just bow down, physically bowing down, and physically bowing down to that power. It makes an immense difference. It makes a big difference, according to my opinion, by doing this, because we have always been taught that all these conventional practices have always been told us everything is inside of us. Everything is inside of us. And so we have awakened from inside. We can awaken from inside, but we will see that body also needs to awaken to that. The body itself has to awaken. So there are two kinds of awakenings. One is an inner awakening that happens through climbing the evolutionary ladder, or moving into the evolutionary cycles of gross body, subtle body, causal body, and moving into the blissful states. That is inner part of your being. And then there is this bodily awakening, in which this slight trace of ego that remains is eliminated by physically acknowledging and knowing that there exists something higher than you. So you're creating a duality within you, even though it's one. You see what I'm saying? Because it does not give room for the ego to remain. Now, ego is the one that says we should not do this, because something we are trying to say, oh, there is a higher and I am lower. It's not about higher and lower. This is not what the teaching is. There is no higher and lower. There is an acknowledgement that there exists a power beyond me. And through such acknowledgement, you will see that there is a possibility, there is a great happening of transmission that happens by virtue of such acknowledgement and appreciation. For example, the sun and the moon. The moon does not have its own light. The moon reflects the light of the sun. But everybody feels, oh, the sun, the moon is radiating its light, and everybody of us are enjoying the beautiful moon, not knowing that actually it is the light of the sun which is reflected on the moon. It is the same thing. What happens to when bodily awakening is through the matter, through virtue, by virtue of transmission, our deha vritti, deha means physical body, gets transformed into deva vritti. Deva vritti means divine, deva. Deva means shining. We become shining, radiant, not through effort, which is in the first two stages, but by virtue of grace and transmission, which happens due to the bodily surrendering to it. Because, like I said, we don't want any trace of ego to be there. Transmission can only happen fully and completely when there is a participation in this way. Because there you do not allow, not possible for the ego to remain. Because body is the seat of the ego, the final seat of it. The moment you surrender the body, whether the ego wants it or you don't want it, it surrenders along with it. There's no chance of it to happen. But it should be genuine surrender. It should not be just a physicality. Means there should be a feeling involved with that. It just cannot be, just doing it for the ritualistic manner. It should be done by the real feeling of it to any deity, any god, anyone that you feel which is important in your life, who holds as an inspiration, like an archetype god. And you feel, okay, there is this archetype god that I feel that I can closely connect to. And then you just feel yourself moving at the feet in complete purity, not in anything else, in no other sense, but in complete purity of surrendering your ego through the bodily action of moving to the feet of it. And you will see when I do that, whenever I feel that there, or anybody of you will feel it, you'll experience in such grace and love and transmission by just the act of it. You see, every sage has said to us, liberation is transcendence of self, self-transcendence. Whenever we are predisposed to being inwards all the time, and we are conditioned through our conventional norms and point of views that, okay, this is where I have to go, this is where I shall go and meet myself, you're just meeting yourself. You're not transcending yourself. Self-transcendence means dropping off the self itself. Self-dropping, which you can do very well in the moment, moment by moment, by acknowledging and by appreciating, by turning your body, whole body, turning towards the object of your devotion, the object of the higher other, that is your deity, and feeling and feeling at the feet of your chosen deity. By doing that, as I said, there is a transformation in my experience, and you could do, and you may take it, not take it, that's up to you how you feel. But in my experience, in my feeling, that the moment we transcend that self also, we don't want ego to even clinging to ourself somehow. No, we leave that also. We just allow ourselves to move right at the feet of the object of devotion. By doing so, there is a change, a transformation that takes place on a cellular level in our body, in our physical body. And we start to feel like there is a covering which protects us. You see, many people in this path will experience that the body is not fully integrated, not fully supporting your inner realization. Certain hidden tendencies, pain, trauma will cling to your body level. It will start clinging to it. And that is experience of many advanced sadhaks also, you know. And that is because they haven't thought about bodily awakening in terms of that. Because all the time we have been told the body is full of filth. The body is to go. You have to transcend the body. The body is this. The body, you're not the body. So there is this negative rejection. It's kind of not a negative rejection. It's a rejection. I can call it negative rejection. There is a rejection of the body. And because of that, we cannot know the divinity that holds, that body holds. The entirety of your being is spiritual, is spirit. Not just the inward, even the outward. But as long as and so long as we are in the humanness and trapped in the humanness, and we only know that one point of view, that strategy that we have, the tact that we have, that we need to go inside for every solution. As long as that ego uses this as a strategy, as a tact, we are not addressing the real thing. That little ego that is hidden in your skin, in the physicality. See, Because anything that threatens your body, you see, little bit also, in spite of all the jnana that you have, in spite of all the wisdom and understanding that you have, the moment something threatens that, your body, immediately something comes to defend it. Right away. And then you know it, it's your ego. Right? And all the time you have spent so much investing on this one thing, how do I get rid of my ego? And the way you do it is only through one way. Forget the body. And then go inside and maybe you get and trace to the origin of the ego. I tell you, self-realization, the origin is the ego is inwards. But the liberation of the whole system, including your body, the bodily awakening is not through inwards. It has to be through a bodily act of surrender, which should be done. When you do that, there will be purification. Not inward purification as we understand that, but it's like, it's a humbling purification. The humbling effect of it. You humble yourself by doing, by certain acts which are bodily in action. So even though I know how I sound, you may think this guy sounds a little weird, you know, because all this time I'm talking about all my stages to be inside, within, because that's what sages have been telling us all this time. But you look at all the our scriptures and you look at all the sages' life, they're always bowing down to somebody or the other. That is our culture, not a culture of the Indian way, but the culture of spirituality itself is about humbling and knowing that what your humbling being is, which has to be done through the act, bodily act of surrendering to your higher other, which I categorically say at the feet of the higher other, bodily, by participation, active participation there, through deity, higher deities. And you know, one of the things that I do and we do and encourage, and then you'll see the change. I tell you, one change, that one or two changes and tips on how to do it, how to turn your body towards the object of your, supposing you cannot find any deity that you really love, because you know, we are believing in nirguna. Nirguna means without any attributes, no form, formless. The beingness also is formless, right? But now here he's telling me to actually create a form. You're creating a form. So you're going back. It seems you're going back into old ways of from there. Now he's getting us into trouble. This thing is so much trouble. My God. But I'm saying try it and see for yourself what you feel. I'm not saying you have to think about a particular god or a particular guru or anything. Just take who you feel, respect who you have tremendous respect and love for. And which comes very naturally to somebody or something, you know, like a god that you can feel. That it could be Shakti, Mother, Shiva, Vishnu, Christ, Hanuman. I just so many gods are there. So many. 33 billion gods are there in India. Choose one of them. And because that doesn't matter who you choose. What matters? And of course, it matters, and there's a different science study to it. What matters? And, you know, that's a different topic for another way. But let's not get into today's topic about that. But to start off, you can start about looking at just a deva. So one mantra that I always say that you can repeat is Sarvadeva Samarpan. Sarvadeva Samarpan you should repeat as much as you can. Means everything is surrendered to the deva. So one thing that I make some people around in my satsang also do and retreat also do, and everybody who is with me know about it, is that before I can take food and eat myself, we do a little prayer, which is Sarvadev Samarpan, Dev Samarpan, Dev Samarpan, Dev Samarpan, Dev Samarpan. I give it to the Deva first. And then I eat the food. After I have given, offered, I eat it and nourish myself. It's a secondary. First comes the Deva. Nourish him or her, whoever you feel in your mind, in your this thing. And then you eat yourself. Whether some people are, of course, non-vegetarians, vegetarians. So that's why you should say, you know, after you've done Dev Samarpan, whoever accepts this food, please accept it. If it's non-veg, the non-veg, there are deities who love non-veg too, you know. There are. And there are deities who love vegetarian only. You cannot offer Vishnu non-veg food. It is not right. Because he's not, if you have that in your mind. That's why it's safer to say that Deva who will accept my food as his food, please accept it. So one thing that you do is through this way. Any bhog, anything you're having, you know, try to keep the Deva in your mind first, the God in your mind first, and then nurture yourself or partake that bhoga. That way you will see that there is always somebody higher than you with whom you will always feel this something being transmitted all the time to you. Without being completely, too fanatic about it. And don't be fanatic about it. It's just to do it, to be doing it moment by moment as you recollect it. If you don't remember it, it's fine. You don't get it cursed or something. So just don't feel that way. But what you can do as you feel by doing this, that there will be a certain kind of humbling existence that you'll have. You will not be in pride. Oh, I know everything. Pride is a form of ego, isn't it? Arrogance. And there is a lot of spiritual arrogance today. And that's why it's very important that you must have, and we do know it, that there is a higher power. It's not that we don't, with whom we can leave the result of it at your feet and leave it there in samarpan. Samarpan means surrendering. By doing such samarpan, you will have what you call as an access to samarpan nadi, which is not an inner nadi. Because everything else, you can trace it down. Okay, I feel the energy. Now I can feel it, in the state of beyond Turiya. I know this is Amrita nadi. This is not about that at all. It is the love that you feel by surrendering your entire being, your mind, your faculties, including your physical body to the object of your devotion, by virtue of which you will have a grace or transmission and you will be able to embody some of the qualities, not through effort, but through grace. When we talk about Deva, Deva means shining ones. What are the qualities of shining ones? Magnanimity. Expansiveness, compassion, equanimity, more important, purity, most important, purity. And the most important of all is, you see all the devas, whenever you see those angels or devas, whomever you see, you'll see they're always praying to the higher power, always praying. Our life should always be a continuous prayer to the higher divine. Always. Not sit all the time, interiorizing ourselves, moving inwards all the time. That's just one part of it. Not just being so self-absorbed that we become self-obsessed. That all the answer is within me. That is also part of arrogance, I feel. It's a spiritual trap. That everything is inside me. I can get all solutions from inside. No, you won't. The bodily awakening is an important part of it that needs to be there. The body has to integrate with the inner awakenings. And for that, you need to know the way to surrender to the higher divine being. So this is what I wanted to talk about in a very brief manner, and more I think we will speak on this in the retreats. But in the retreats, there will be, don't get confused between this and that. Like, oh, is he switching from here? Please let me tell you, no. I am not telling you, driving you outwards into any kind of idol worshipping. Please take it in that way. I'm not bringing you to the ages of of shamans and ages of those kind of ritualists and things. No, I'm not doing any of that. I'm taking things in the right perspective. I'm telling things for what they were and are important for what is the reason, what context there are reason. The first two stages of moving and diving inwards are a very important part of your evolution cycle. They refine your consciousness. They're important to gain maturity in your consciousness. They're important tools that you may have to progress from one cycle, deeper cycle to another one. It's an evolutionary ladder of it. But here that I'm talking about is more about surrendering your body ego at the feet in a humbling manner, in a feeling manner to a higher. So which is a different way. And both, even though they sound different in some way, they're actually same. Because as you see, as you will see that as you start to more, get more deeper into that worshipping through the physical act of the physical participation of, which is a little bit demonstrative a bit to yourself and to people around. But as you start to do that, you will feel that something more deeper, you're moving inwardly more deeper. It has something else. It is that transmission auto corrects some of the things that you put in your thought that you could do it with your limitation of intellect, with a limitation of your faculties that are there, with a limitation of your mind. You thought you could settle it. That was ego. But when you allow grace and transmission to take place, that time you will see, and in the right way, as you surrender your last intention of surrendering your ego, at that moment of time, you will see that you're also going very deep in yourself, very deep and very effortlessly you'll be able to go. So please understand that in this perspective. Do not think in any way that I'm switching in any way. It is what is relevant for that particular time. Yes, at that particular time. So I'll take one or maybe two questions. If there is anybody who wants to ask me a question on this, please be free to ask me about it. Is there anything that is in your mind right at this moment, or anything that requires clarification about this, or anything that you feel? Please. Just anything. Raise your hands if anybody wants to ask. Ah, okay. There, Leandro. Namaste, yes. Leandro.
Namaste.
Yes, yes, yes. I didn't see
your hand. I would like you to revisit the aspect of self-realization at the next step.
Ah, what do you want me to do?
To make a comment in the what you mentioned is self-realization, but there is a higher
yes
step. Could you make an emphasis in that?
Yes. So you see, self-realization means you have realized who you are, right? It has got nothing to do with the body. Your inner journey, as you are going inside within yourself, as a evolution cycle from one, from gross body to subtle body, from subtle body to causal body, from causal body to Turiya, Turiya to Turiyatita, as you go into the unknown state through by moving inwards, by moving, you're focusing your whole attention strategically or by through techniques or anyway, you move inwards and you realize one day as you peel the onion skin, you realize there's nothing, there's only joy, ananda, Satchitananda, that is called self-realization. So once you are disembodied, disembodied means when you die. When you physically die, you are free. No question, that is self-realization. But what I'm talking here is where you are maybe self-realized, but the body, there is an awakening of consciousness, but the body is not in integration or in alignment with your inner self. So the body also needs an alignment while you are in body. The difference is this. So that whenever you feel the challenges that happen, because many of us feel this challenging things happen as we are more inwardly focused all the time, we are not prepared with how to deal with the bodily. And I'm not talking about diseases and illnesses and all this. I'm talking about certain things that are stored in the body itself, the process within the body, in the physicality of it. And I felt that it was, in my opinion, in my understanding, that there is this ego that remains in the part of the physicality. And it's important, therefore, to free that, also to eliminate that also, for completion to take place. Completion means there is inner awakening as well as a bodily awakening. Both are awakened to it. You cannot have a completion as long as you are still identified with this physical human deha. Deha body means deha means human body. So there has to be a way, and as I felt, and as I started to go more, trying to, because these things are not really written anywhere, you know. And this is my own research, you can say, my own feeling about it, my own, is that unless and until we do not get rid of our ego, also eliminate that aspect of it, bodily awakening is not possible, which means we'll always be a little bit struggling on certain aspects, because then it's not in alignment, it's not in supporting it. But the moment I become more into Deva Vritti, means acknowledging and appreciating that there is this higher power that exists beyond me, suddenly I feel this release of ego and the expectations from my own self. And I just carry on with my normal sadhana and my normal work, leaving all the fruits to the Lord, to the God. So that is what I have creating in one way, in the sense that I'm positioning myself as Samarpan Nadi. If you see in Bhagavad Gita also, it is given in one of the chapters. Klesho dekha daraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta gatir dukham. Krishna said to Arjuna that the state of avyakta, indescribable, that is, formless part of me, is a part of dukkha, suffering. But the form part of me is of joy, is of the dukkha becomes very much less. But if you do the only in the unmanifest form, and you only worship me in the unmanifest form, then even though you will come to me and merge in me, but your life will be of dukkha, suffering. So instead, he said, you feel me in form too. Now that is true with all the, not just Krishna, but anything, anyone that you feel is. So I feel that is what I've connected here in this, is that the missing link is the bodily awakening has not happened, while the inner awakening has taken place. One has gone ahead of the other, and that is why you need to reintegrate it. And for that to happen, two things have to happen. One is the ego has to leave. The ego has to eliminate it. From moment to moment, you need to tell yourself that you're not the most important being in the world. There is somebody there which looks after it, whose responsibility is this, and I will put myself and completely surrender myself bodily. Why bodily? Because as I said, that there is a seed of ego that's still, in my opinion. Now again, I want to stress on this. It's my opinion. Nobody has written it about it like this. But I feel when I look at the science behind everything, why in the olden tradition, people used to fall at the feet of higher beings. What was the reason? There were jnanis sitting together. But then there were pranams happening. What was the reason for it? Why in our tradition also, children were falling at the feet of the parents? There was a tradition. Now nobody follows all this. But there must be something that is there, which shows that there is the science behind it. You know what I mean? That way I'm saying. that there has to be a samarpan. Yeah. Yes, Leandro. Any question? Something?
Well, can you worship that divine without form? Do you need the form?
You know, you can. Like I said, is that you can visualize. You can. You know, you are saying without form, with form, without form. Without. 1 minute. I'll tell you something. What is earth? Is it having form or no? Yes?
No.
No, you well, think this doesn't have form? Well, earth has a form. You're walking on something that is in form, right? Think about it. This earth itself is a Devi, which is called as Bhumi Devi, you know? Bhumi Devi is also a Devi. It's also form. Do you know how much we trample on it, we walk on it? It still gives us everything. It nurtures us, right? So many bodies are dug inside. If I were to worship something, I go and worship the Bhumi too. Why not? It doesn't mean I have to fixate it on a particular god or something. It's the way you look at it. Every particular thing can become your god, can become your deity. If you fall with that acknowledgement. Think about it, how much, when I call about Bhumi Devi, for example. Earth. E-A-R-T-H is heart. H-E-A-R-T-H. Same words. Same. Earth is heart. Heart is earth. The letters are the same thing. The essence is the same thing. When I surrender to earth, I am surrendering my heart, my being and everything to it because that's where I go to. At the end of my life, I merge into this very earth. So I also look at Bhumi Devi as a part of my deity. I can just look at anybody and become and start worshipping that. The important thing is not whom you worship. It is this act of devotion. That itself leads to self-transcendence. That act of submission bodily towards a form is what I feel itself is. At that moment itself, you will realize that there is a release of the ego. And of course, the ego will always object to it. It will say, hello, no. Maybe you'll get manipulated. Hey, that's all nonsense. This is not the time. You need to go and go into the form. I'm not saying about you. So Leandro, don't think about it. I'm just saying how mind works, how it works in that way, you know. So when ego tells me this thing, this is what you should not do, I do exactly the opposite of it. Because that's exactly what I should do. It is very simple for me. My criteria is very simple. The moment ego says, don't do this, I immediately go and do exactly that thing. You know, what is hurt, what I feel is against my, which is humbling effect for me. I'll do that. I will do 1,000 times that very thing, which I feel is what my ego does not approve of or the mind doesn't approve of. Or through any ideas or preconceived notion, you know. So it is just my feeling. You can take, anybody can take what they want to take. You could go into the first two stages and, you know, whatever. But I think when you do any sadhana, the surrendering part should also be equally cultivated, known and appreciated and acknowledged. Because honestly, you are not the any way going to, you know, you're not in control of everything at all the time. Not possible to do that. And your transcendence of being itself is the highest truth. Transcendence of being. Many times we are in being and we could be in ego. So it by doing this act, by this whole act of appreciating and acknowledging that there is somebody and bowing down to this, the ego has no room. You see, you cut the ego right there. It is forced to bow down along with your body because you are bowing with everything, not just with your mind. I can bow, I can go by in my mind and think I'm bowing down to the divine at the feet. But if I do it physically, there is no question that the ego can disguise itself as anything. See, what I mean to say? That is the difference, what I'm trying to say. It's a little, it'll take a little while to come across it maybe, but as you do it, you will know. Yeah? Yes, Leandro?
Well, the issue is that for me as an artist, that I'm a creator of the form, as a professional, the formation, let's say, the professional deformation of being a creator of forms, for me, the form is questionable. So this is...
Yeah.
Why
can he surrender to... As you say, Sarvadeva Sarpana, meaning surrender to higher power without form?
Without form.
I understand that. Well, you continue what you do. I am not saying you have to change anything. You can continue as you feel. And, you know, you see with time what how that form takes place or whatever you think, you know, you... But I can tell you one thing, even this, your creating of a form is through a power that has happened. It cannot happen through without a power. And you think it is unmanifest, but everything around it, even your expression is manifest. If you are manifest, your expression is manifest, which is form. I would say the one that gives you power is also manifested, not necessarily unmanifest. That is a possibility which maybe you have not come and reconciled to, which I am able to reconcile because I say there is an unmanifest form. There is an unmanifestation, but I also believe in the manifestation of the power. See, this is what I'm saying. There is both the things. That's why Sri Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, you can approach me as you want, as unmanifest or as a manifest. I follow that. I don't follow according, there is only the unmanifest. No, because I live in the manifest. I live in with Mother Bhumi, which is manifest. I live with all of you who are manifest. I say I love you. I say I love to manifest. Everybody of you are manifest. And then I say, oh, there is only one truth that is unmanifest? No. The totality of knowing real intelligence is to acknowledge and acknowledge that there is this unmanifest also, and all of you are that form in the manifest also. There is both the things that are happening together in a parallel way, not just one. It's my feeling, you know. I feel that way it is more completion. More completion is there. Otherwise, there will be a subconscious rejection of manifestation, just like the way we reject our body unconsciously. And so we do not allow ourselves to know the divinity that our body has, because we have rejected the body, saying I am not the body. Vedanta says I am neither this, I am neither that, I am neither this, that. No, niti niti. And so there is only one thing that is there, that is ekam eva dvitam. No two, only one. It's true. Okay, that is self-realization. That's not what I am talking about. Today's topic was not about that. I am talking about the power of what exists in spite of that. In the bodily level, in the relative existence level, there is a manifested form which Sri Krishna and all the Puranas, if you see, you tell me one thing. One simple thing I want to ask you. What existed before, Vedas or Puranas? Okay, I'll tell you. Vedas exist. Okay, let me tell you. Vedas existed before Puranas. Number one. Do you know who were the gods in the Vedas? You'll be surprised. Nature. Because when people came into being at that moment, the god was not Krishna, not Vishnu, not even Shiva. Even Shiva was not there. Shiva was known as Rudra. Shiva was not even known that time. You know who was the main god? Indra. Indra was the main god. And you know who was the second god? Agni. And third was Varun. These were the three gods that were there during the Veda times. Veda. When the Vedas are all in glory of all these three gods. And you know who was called the mischief god? Shiva. He was called the god of mischief. He was called Rudra, who basically is worshipping who? Indra. Indra is called the Deva, the Lord of all the Devas. If you see the old mythology, he is called as the God of all. That is called Veda. After Vedas came, there was an end of Vedas which is called a Vedanta, which is what we study. Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, we study, right? Ekam. That's all born into one. That Vedanta, when it finishes off, all the Vedas are done, it's called Upanishads. Upanishads are called as Vedanta. Now, that is called the highest authority, which Shankaracharya gave. Highest in Advaita. Finish. But do you know, after 5,000 years of that, what happened? Puranas came. And you know what Puranas? There is a Shiv Puran, Kali Puran, Vishnu Puran. These are all the Puranas that came. And of course, Jesus came much later. I'm not talking about, Buddha came much later. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about if you trace back tradition in terms of that. If Vedanta was able to satisfy all the mysteries of everybody, what was the need for Puranas then to come? You tell me. Why was Puranas come? Why did Kalika Puran come? Why did Vishnu Puran come? Why did Shiva Puran come? Because, and at that moment, suddenly all these three deities became important. Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, they became important gods, and in Kali became for the Shakti, became important gods. And who became the mischief here? Indra became the mischief god. See, it totally switched from there. See, what I'm trying to say here is, there is no one truth that we feel, oh, only this exists and that does not exist. I feel there is a reason why these things were given at a particular or at a times which were given. And we must imbibe those teachings from the way that we feel are important to me. And I'm giving a logically scientific way that I feel and see in this way. That's the reason why, certain gods are important to be worshipped. And in my view, in a relative world, and I'm not talking about Upanishads, I'm not talking about Advaita Vedanta, I'm not talking about Vedanta, which is the end of all the teachings. But in terms of worshipping the deity, then you follow certain things. That is what. Yeah. I hope this was an answer. It's a big answer, but just trying to just connect to certain things, and how is an interesting thing to do. We can make our own God. Like I said, Bhumi Devi was one God that I felt was so good. I just, one day I was just sitting and talking and, I had so much compassion, so much love for the earth, what earth does for us. People spit on it. People do so many things on it. The earth never comes back and tells us, the mother never gets up and says, hey, why are you doing this? Now you will take the earth away from your legs, and from your feet. Sometimes it happens. Earth gets shaken away from your feet, but that is not because of poor earth, mother. It is because of your own actions, right? The whole earth gets shaken away from your feet, taken away, but that is not because of her. She is so compassionate. It's about us looking at for me, it is all an excuse to surrender whatever I am in any form, whether it is inward or outward. I feel that is my life. That is real worship. Yeah? Okay. All right, Leandro. Chrisella, I think now it is already 8:30. We have been gone past, but I love the conversation that we had. And thank you, Leandro, for a beautiful question. And Chrisella, I think I'll see you in LA. And Leandro, I'm going to miss you and your questions and everything. But and everybody who are coming there, thank you for coming. And who can't make it for some reason, please know we are still there. I'm still there. And we will connect. Connect always. Connection. The connection is always there within us. And and that's it. Now I have to have my dinner. Before I have my dinner, I have to offer it to the deity. Yes? All right. Thank you very much. Pranams. And love you all. And see you soon, everybody in LA. And online spot. I'll see you soon. Take care. Thank you, Sanji, and thank you, Tony. I missed Inge today, but my love to him and everybody else. All right, Devyam, see you. Take care. Vince, I can't see you, but I love you. Take care. Bye.